All right, we're going to go to the phone line here and talk to Mr. Stephen Hines, our resident poet laureate at The Crude Life, as well as a content contributor at ESG University. I guess you're an adjunct professor at, in fact, we're bringing back the old professor. That's right, Professor Stephen Hines, back when we did the Weekly Word, talking about a lot of these very issues right now. Mr. Stephen Hines, how are you doing today in Wisconsin?
Well, I'm feeling adjunct.
Oh, geez, it must be snow surfing out there. I saw you posted a picture on social media about some Lake Michigan surfers. What's going on with that?
Oh, that's really funny. It's about a mile. I live right on Lake Michigan, Jason. I think I told you. I have a balcony right overlooking the lake, which is one reason why I've stayed here for 22 years. I've never stayed any place that long. But about a mile north of me, there is this cove that has perfect winds, and any day of the year, you will see, when the winds are right, you'll see people surfing there. Now, they wear, obviously, cold water equipment when they're out there, but there's just something about it, you know, so it sort of triggers my, I mean, anything is possible if you can surf in Wisconsin.
I think it's I thought it was fantastic. But the first thing I thought of, it was an artificial robot intelligence machine that did that ad for you, or did that post for you. Sorry, say ad, did that post for you. But then I looked and I went, no, that looks pretty real. So, of course, you can catch that on ESG University on LinkedIn, as well as our website. And Stephen Hines has been a contributor with some of his observations, because he's quite astute when it comes to a lot of the different happenings. His background, of course, Columbia University. He was a artistic poet back in the day, got brought into the telecommunications industry, was part of the AOL Time Warner merger as far as the documentation of that and playing a role in that. And we're very happy to have him here today. And here's why. Woke up this morning, went to the old social media to do my distribution. You know how I used to deliver the newspaper when I was like 10 years old? Well, that's what I do
me
in social media.
By the way. Me
yeah.
Too.
Well, that's what we're doing on social media, right? We're just delivering the newspaper to our subscribers.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
I saw that you posted one of the better posts I've seen in a while, because it involved Michael Mann. Not the Academy Award-winning director. No, this is a different kind of director. This is a climate change director. And I thought it was so ironic, because on the same day, ESG University puts out Jesse Ussebel, who's probably on the Mount Rushmore when it comes to research and climate change. In fact, the actual gentleman, researcher, who is responsible and given credit for the name decarbonization, debuts on The Crude Life January 1st, day one. And was it MSNBC or CNBC brings out Michael Mann, the man who's been debunked.
MSNBC, Jason.
Who was it? I'm sorry?
It was MSNBC.
So MSNBC brings out, oh, that's even worse now. Okay, MSNBC brings out Michael Mann, who is, I thought actually his science was debunked so much by so many that he wasn't allowed back into any sort of scientific, questions. He, you know, he was kind of like banned in a casino for cheating type of a thing, because his data.
Well, he moved to Australia, I think, to get out from under all the flack that he was enduring. He tried to sue a couple of his contemporaries for malicious slander, because they said the hockey stick, and that's the famous part of Michael Mann, the famous hockey stick that proved out to be not true.
Well, let's pause real quick here, because the hockey stick is where I wanted to go next, to say that, first of all, we're about 4 minutes in, and people are saying, who's Michael Mann and all this? Michael Mann came out with a lot of the momentum where we're at today with what was known as the hockey stick graph, and it showed like this just sharp hockey stick of a move when it comes to the climate. Well, then they found out that he left out all this data and carried the one here when it should have been a zero and all kinds of different things. And they applied the same thing to other areas and the exact same hockey stick occurred. It was kind of like one of those magic tricks where you use math. No matter what number you start with, it's always going to end up with three. And so that's a Michael Mann in a nutshell. So Mr. Stephen Hines,
right, he did it in the mid-90s.
Yes.
Just to put it into a historical sense.
So yes, he did it in the mid-90s, and then Al Gore. Al Gore kind of took the reins from there. But go ahead, Steve.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to say that Al Gore and Michael Mann had as much, and in the beginning of the international report called the IPCC, which is supposed to be balanced and what to expect from climate, etc. And even there, the IPCC, which is supposed to be the gold standard, they got caught in what they call climate gate, where when they put together their report, they were communicating among each of the people who were contributing and changing what they were saying to come out with the message they wanted, which was about in the mid-2000s. So there's been a lot of scandal in and around, but I think that Michael, he's moved back to the United States, and I think he's trying to get back in the discussion.
Well, I was going to ask you, actually, I didn't even read the story. I just saw that Michael Mann was back in the news. And to me, that was a Far Side comic. That was my Sunday comic. So what was the actual story about?
Oh, well, it's this woman who was trying to prove climate change. And the proof became Michael Mann. And what he represented, and the optimism he and this woman who wrote the story have about certainty of climate change, and the sense that something is finally being done something about it.
So over the past week, you've posted quite a few stories through your Substack account, also through your social media accounts, as well as ESG University. What story stood out the most in the last week?
Boy, that's a tough question.
Oh, I know, because there's so many of them.
So many things going on. What's happening in Europe right now? So far this winter, they've gotten a break, and the weather has been mild other than a few days. And so they have relaxed a little bit, and it doesn't look like they're going to get caught without energy and cold weather, which is very deadly to people, of course, and in Europe has proved to be very deadly in cold weather. I mean, that's probably as important as anything. But the other thing is right now, with the changing of the House right now, we're going to be going back and reviewing what Biden administration, their regulation has been doing, and I think there's some corrective on the, you know, in the immediate future, as we make these people like Michael Mann explain more why they feel the way they do, which is pretty, it's on pretty rocky basis without much science.
Well, I tell you the way I see this ESG movement going is I see the narrative going to climate versus capitalism, and the bankers and the financial planners are making money the whole way, no matter what you do, because if you move your money out or you move your money in, they make a ton of money off these ESG fees. And the other thing I'm seeing is that when the climate versus capitalism debate is starting to brew out of this ESG movement, I just see China and Russia gaining more power. And this is remarkable to me, because a lot of American politicians and leaders are the ones driving this ship. Your thought?
Well, you know, I mean, that's an argument. In fact, there's a generalist, I guess that's the best way to describe it, but capital G, out of the University of Texas or University of Colorado. Lienhan is his name. I'll try and think of his first name. Anyway, his argument is that China, in fact, is in the process of unraveling right now. And COVID is, it may have been its undoing. So, I mean, what am I trying to say? I'm trying to say I don't know as much about what's happening in the future as anybody else. I have inclinations, and I would bet, frankly, that both Russia and China will be neutered by what's happening right now, especially if Europe and the United States start adopting a more practical approach to energy and to climate and to economics.
That's interesting because I see Russia in a win-win situation. I see Russia as taking a very tactical move because of this ESG movement where they saw a country going off of foundational, traditional fossil fuels, whichever term you care to use, and at the same time, putting a lot of dependency on the government. So what they did is they went in and reminded the Ukraine what ESG means. So whether they pull in or stay, whether they pull out or stay in, I think, honestly, Russia is going to come out even stronger no matter what happens, no matter what happens.
Well, I think that what we're really talking about, Jason, is how they're governed, how China, how
sure.
European Union, how China is governed. The problem with both of the China and Russia right now is that a small group of people are making decisions for
right.
the whole country. In many cases, and also the satellites, other countries that are depending on both Russia and China.
Well, I tell you, it brings us back to America now and say, how's that any different than what America is happening? I mean, take a look at the Biden administration. That's a small group. I mean, you know as well as I do that democracy, a lot of times, 50% of the population doesn't pick the president. It's like 30% because they usually about 60% of the population votes, and then it's half of that. And so when you do the numbers, it is a small group that is polarizing the nation right now. So,
I think that's right.
Yeah.
And I think if you're looking to pin the tail on the donkey right now, and that's a negative term.
Oh, come on. Hey, this is a podcast. You can say jackass.
It's pin the tail on the donkey time. But I would say right now that this large group, well-funded group of well-meaning activists right now are having have had an enormous impact in terms of marketing and visibility. And that's the environmental NGOs, the not-for-profits. Why? Because they have, Sierra Club has 12 offices, Jason. They have a $2 billion a year budget. I mean, they have 100 times more money than the private sector spends on marketing as it relates to climate. And so what I wrote a piece and a poem, in fact, I've started to write, include a little bit of energy into in my poetry, not trying to be more political, but trying to say, hey, there's something going on right now, and a good half of the world is being ignored. They are being asked to use solar panels and wind turbines in a place that it has no economic viability, and it doesn't help them become modern.
I'm starting
Whether
to believe
it's China or Africa or good parts of Russia and good parts of China. The weak parts of both China and Russia is that there is a small group of people, really, in an economic sense, and they will be out of power by the people who are the have-nots, who are simply not going to take it anymore.
The meek will inherit the earth. Is that what you're trying to say?
No question about it, Jason. I think that is exactly the direction we're heading in right now. And because we're in the throes of getting rid of an old, the Al Gore, what I like to call the Al Jazeera Gore thinking, and on our way to something more practical. As is, I always have trouble pronouncing Asha Bell's name, but there's like, you know, there's Alex Epstein, there's Judith Curry, there's Scott Tinker, there's Robert Bryce, there's Bjorn Lomborg, but a whole group of very smart people with a lot of the climate and the real information of what the Earth and its and its being has been doing. So Judith Curry was on with Robert Bryce last week. It was really great. Other than she said, you know, a couple times too often for my taste, but that's a bit small problem. And Robert Bryce is a very smart guy, and he was asking a lot of questions. So she was the I knows, you know, was just trying to formulate her thought. But she's the one who said there isn't anybody in the world right now who's willing to debate her on the facts.
I believe that.
The climatological facts.
I think
that's probably true for Bjorn Lomborg. You know, it's true for Alex Epstein, although he's been trying to do too much on his own. In a sense, people like us, people in the industry who know better, the adults in the room, as the saying goes, we have to band together and start taking charge of the narrative right now and making sure that both sides of the discussion are heard.
Just a couple
because
minutes.
The other side doesn't have a very good argument.
So just a couple minutes left here. I did want to ask you one final thought. I was doing a little bit of research on BlackRock, which ironically, I believe means coal. And BlackRock came around, I think, 1988. And then they just had some meteoric rise. Like, man, they must have knew the right people and the right rooms and all kinds of stuff because...
Well, it's because Wall Street was changing.
Whatever it is, it happened, okay? And they ended up controlling a nice percentage of the global wealth. And they ended up becoming basically a lobbyist group. They became a political activist group. And when I look around and I'm starting to see Starbucks and Black Rifle Coffee, that's becoming political now. Companies are becoming like lobbyist groups. They are actually becoming like, hey, we're a Republican coffee company. Well, we're a Democrat coffee company. Well, we're a Black Rock. We're an ESG Democratic financial firm. Well, we are Vanguard. Take a hike. I mean, what is going on with this, Steve? I mean, it's like a whole new world we're entering into where you got nonprofits that are now special interest lobbyist groups. You got governments that are starting to get like that. It's a crazy time.
No question. Well, I think we're slowly going into a larger international market right now, where some of the have-nots are starting to emerge, whether it's Cambodia or Vietnam or, you know, even places are likely to make a comeback, and that's Venezuela. Why? After so many bad years of bad governance, they have the largest known deposit of natural gas and oil in the world. Venezuela does. So I think it's BlackRock has stood for really, in essence, an enlightened investment community broker who has been believing in ESG for several years and has been a large proponent of ESG. Now, BlackRock has hit, they've hit the wall right now. Why? Because they're on both sides of all these transactions. They're on the side as an advisor, and then they also make money off what they've advised.
That's what I'm saying. I think the bankers and the financial advisors need to be investigated on this because they're creating.
Oh, they will be.
Well, think about it. They're creating a whole new marketplace based on fear. Now, they're trying to use facts, but a lot of the facts are hockey sticks and they're curves that don't exist. And they're leaving out the butterfly effect and all kinds of different catchphrases that they can have. But at the end of the day, what you said is right. No matter what you do with your money, no matter where you move it, they're taking a cut. They're taking a percentage.
Well, back in the 90s when, and I was working on Wall Street at the time, I think I even told you that, doing marketing and all. But back in the 90s when private placement, that is, you know, private investments,
sure,
were now getting big enough, they were competing against, let's say, fund money, retirement funds, et cetera, et cetera. So for a while, many of the banks had what they called a Chinese wall between the part of their business that was doing the financing on it and the part of the business that was doing the investment, the speculation.
Sure.
And they pretended there were, they didn't talk to each other. Well, that, you know, simply human nature. I mean, that was just a bogus argument, but the same argument right now, they're using a form of the Chinese wall so that they can separate the notion of ESG and enlightened investments, and also, but also being the broker making transactions no matter where it came from.
Boy, that's something else, because, you know, you talked about the Chinese wall, and in the media world, we called it the separation of editorial and sales, and in government, the separation of church and state. And so there, and in science, actually, it's called a double blind study, where you, that's the one thing that climate change science has never done. They've never done a double blind study to where they can, and what a double blind study is, folks, that is, if I go up to the Eiffel Tower, and I drop a bowling ball off the Eiffel Tower, and I send that equation out to two labs, one of them in South Dakota and the other one in Australia. And I tell them that the bowling ball weighs this amount, the wind velocity was this, the amount of meters involved with the height was this. They'll be able to give me a pretty precise answer to my question. Let's say if I ask, how quickly will it hit the ground? They'll be able to give me a very precise estimate, and they both will be pretty accurate within a very small variable of difference. That's what's called a double blind study. That's never been done with climate science.
Well, and they're trying to introduce a whole new notion over here in the U.S. through BlackRock, but also in Europe, the European Union.
No, Steve, what happened is that
it's effectively double fiduciary responsibility, which is impossible.
Well,
you can't be responsible to two different parties and create, you know, anything that resembles a balanced, thoughtful report on anything you've been asked to do.
What ended up happening is that...
It's called double materiality.
Well,
materiality are all the material facts that go into a company so that you can determine what their value is.
Well, we're going to wrap up here because I've got to hit the road. But in closing, I'll say this, that I think step number one for ESG University is to create an awareness that politicians and lawyers are not scientists. And they're the ones that are directing science right now.
Well, and the accountants, they all have conflicts, and they are no longer to be trusted to give us a decision like you'd expect from the Supreme Court. They can't do that anymore. They just represent one side. And more people are realizing that large groups, second or third largest holder of assets in the world, Vanguard, has walked away from ESG and all of the regulations they've been trying to write. So it's out there. And there is a wave coming, and it's not going to be capitalism against ESG. It's going to be a good old-fashioned practical economics meets good old practical environmentalism.
And what's the website people can find you at?
They can find me at The Crude Life, I'm happy to say. They can find me at ESG University. They can find me on Facebook. I post, I think, in 5 or 6 places these days. They can find me on Substack, Stephen Hines, at Substack.com. But I am trying to be a source of good information without much prejudice, and try to talk about the finances of the world in a way that are true to accounting, but they're also true to making sure that this world does not enter a degrowth period. And in fact, the way out of our dilemma is through natural, well-done, thoughtful growth for all people, for the entire world.